accession number 9434, reel 6.
Mr. Bill Collins, reel 6. You were telling me about an incident when an officer stopped you in the frontline trench.
Yes, the Captain Kingston of the Queen's Base, he stopped me and looked at, I suppose I looked very young. I was 20, you see, I was only 20. And although I'd got corporal stripes up, he looked at me and said, "Where are you off to?" So I said, "I'm with the trench mortar, sir." "Oh," he says, "you're underage." I said, "No, sir, I'm a full age." He said, "I'll have you sent home." I said, "I pulled out my Army Book 64, which was my details, out of my pocket, and I showed it to him, and he looked at it very closely and gave it to me back. He said, "All right, on you go." And I went up to the gun, you see. But that day, I saw something which is almost out of a book of fairy tale stories. At the bottom of the trench, where the gun, close to the gun, was a hole about 2 feet high and about 2 feet wide. And I looked at it and I said, "What's going on here?" And as I spoke, a head came through the hole pushing a child's trolley, a sort of flat, open trolley, you see, with a hand, with a long handle, you see a child playing with. And that was pushed in front of him, and this head appeared. The lorry was full of earth, and the head appeared. Of course, the man key came out. He was a little fellow, and I said to him, What's on? He says, "I'm countermining." He says, "3 days ago, I was at the coalface in South Wales." He says, "But they swore me in, put me in uniform." He says, "And here I am digging trying to dig a countermine under the Germans' trench, because a little while previously they had blown up the trench to our right, occupied by the 16th Lancers, and caused considerable casualties." That was the first trench mining incident, I think, in the Ypres area. But it was almost one sees the children doing a little flat truck with earth on it, and they, of course, the earth was put into sandbags and used to build up the trench.
How long were you in the line in this period in the front line?
Period in the front line, we went up soon after Christmas, a few days after Christmas, and we were there up there about, I should say, coming back from memory now, 10 days. 10 days, 10 to 14 days. A photograph was taken by one of the gunners, and I was standing by the mortar, and I was standing by it, and he showed me a copy afterwards, and it was quite a good copy, standing by this trench mortar in the front line. And I often wonder whether a copy of it has survived. It's because there are so many pictures around, you know, with no description on the back. But I wonder if one has survived.
Now, what was your daily routine during this period in the line?
Well, the daily routine was, I used to get up in the morning after I'd shaved and washed and shaved outside the hut, and shaved as best we could. I used to go up to the mortar, just across a little open clearing. There was an open clearing about 20 yards, 30 yards wide, and there was a notice board high up in the trees, and on it was printed, "Beware of the sniper." I thought that was rather a humorous touch. I mean, you can't beware of a sniper. If he's got you long before you're aware of him. But there it was up there, "Beware of the sniper." And I used to go up to the gun, see them, talk to them. "Anything wrong? Anybody got any aches or pains?" Or what was it? No. Then I would go back to the hut and stay there for the rest of the day, because it was known to the troops in the trench there that I was in this hut. You see, I was there available to treat any, to look after any wounds that came along, no matter which regiment it was. I was there.
So what would you do during this period in the hut? How would you amuse yourself? Because it's
nothing at all. Rest. around, because now and again we were shelled. Now and again we were shelled, and then we just get our heads under the roof and wait until it was over. But it wasn't a heavy shelling. It was just desultory shelling.
You didn't play cards, or were you with anybody in the
Yes, there were always some gunners were on duty, but those who were off duty were usually sleepers. They used to sleep.
Well, was this were you very tired during this? Was it tiring life in the front line?
No, I didn't get tired because I had no exertion. You see, very little exertion.
What did you do in the evening?
Nothing at all. We used to rest at all. You see, you've got to be always there. You had to be ready in case you were needed.
Did you have many casualties come through to you during a typical day?
Pardon?
Did you have many casualties come through in a typical day?
No, might get two, no more.
And what sort of wounds were they? Would they be sniping wounds or?
No, they would be perhaps little splinters from the shells, you know, small splinters.
So nothing very.
Nothing
serious.
Never had a serious.
This
one.
Would be a quiet sector.
Be a very quiet sector, yeah.
Was the danger from snipers a real one?
Oh yes, the danger from snipers was real, all right. The sniper, as a rule, made sure he'd got a target before he fired. And you see, when the man's moving about, and if you're in a wood, I should think he had a very difficult task in fixing his rifle onto a target with trees about and then people moving there.
How far away were the Germans?
About 40 yards.
From the front line?
30 to 40 yards, no more.
That was from the front line?
Yeah, from the front line.
And you were how many yards further back?
About 20 yards behind the front line. We were quite close.
What were the trenches like? Could you describe these early
trenches? Yes, they were cut. It was heavy clay soil. They were cut down to a depth of about 6 feet, six and a half feet, through the roots of the trees. You see, it was quite a thickly lined, tree-lined wood, and they were the trenches were cut down, and it was clay, and the water ran down the sides of the trenches all day, running down the sides of the trenches, this heavy clay stuff. You see.
There was no revetments or anything on this.
Yes, there were some. There was in the front line they had revetments, and of course they had plates through which the rifle was placed. You see, plates with a hole in, steel plates with which the rifle was slid into. And when I noticed that when one of the bays took his rifle out for some purpose, he pushed a wad of 4x2 in to block the hole up straight away. You know, so as to not give the sniper a clear run.
Well, the trenches, what sophistications did they have in the sense of, did they have traverses and fire steps and parapets?
No, there were no fire steps in these trenches. There were traverses, but no fire steps.
Was there barbed wire?
Pardon?
Was there barbed wire in front?
That I don't know. I couldn't see, but I should think not, because they were only about 40 yards apart, you see. And in any case, the trees were quite thick there.
Were your rations the same as they had been while you were in the front
line? Bully beef and biscuits.
And when were they brought up to you?
Pardon?
When were they brought up to you?
Well, they would be. We took a couple of days rest, two or three days rations. We would get them up at night. You see.
Did you get rations? Water. How did you get that up?
Water. Well, I don't know. I couldn't tell you where I got my water from, but I can't remember now. But there was always some water in the bottle, you see.
What about rum or cigarettes? Did you get that brought to you?
No, I never had rum or cigarettes. Not in those days.
They used to wash in your dugout, hut.
We had to get water from the rain, from the pool. There were pools there, you see. You'd scoop a bit of water up from a pool into a bucket. It was a water bucket.
Were you expected to shave, or could you not do it? Was that choice?
No, we did it from choice.
What about latrines? What latrine arrangements?
Yes, there was the latrines were dug by the side of a trench, and there you use those, you see. Just beyond, just in the rear of the front line trenches, there were the latrines.
What about lice? They hadn't arrived yet?
They hadn't arrived then, no. They came a little later on. They came actually in March and April.
Yeah. What about rats? Were there any of those around? Rats?
No, none. Not at that stage, no.
Right. With the wet and the weather, were there any problems with the cold and wet conditions?
With the weather. No, I don't think so. No, we were well. We had, of course, we had our shirts and our uniforms were, and great coats were very good. The putties we had and the army boots. No, there was no problem about the weather.
So you didn't get trench feet or
anything? No, no. By the way, before we went up to occupy that trench mortar post, we had a session in Ypres at which all our feet were massaged with whale oil. We had to massage our feet with whale oil, and at the end of the session we were inspected by an officer to see that every man had properly whale oiled his feet, and that is why we never had any foot trouble, although it was January.
Is there anything else, any other incidents you remember from this brief period of 10 days in the line?
I don't think so. No.
What happened when you went back to I Battery then?
Well, one night I was standing by while the guard was being paraded for the gun park. And after the customary preliminaries, you know, the officer calls out an order, E. Springs, you know, the rifle is at the slope, at the slope, and the order is given E. Springs, and the bolt of the rifle is pulled backwards and forwards, and the trigger is pulled. Well, unfortunately, one of the gunners had left a round in his breech, and pulled the trigger, and the rifle went off. Now, they were facing a wall, and this bullet must have gone into the wall, ricocheted back from the wall, and it entered the back of one of the gunners, ran up his spine, came out and went in again. A fantastic wound. Well, I was standing by. Of course, immediately he fell, and I laid him down on the blanket. I got him to get a blanket, laid him down on a blanket on the ground. It was dry. And I rushed up the road to get Captain... I had no medical officer there, you see, but 100 yards up the road was Brigade Headquarters of the 1st Cavalry Brigade, and Captain T.J. Crean, V.C., was the medical officer at the headquarters. And I got a message to him, and he came out to see me, and I told him what had happened, and he says, I'll be down immediately. And he came down in 5 minutes, he was there, and he examined the wound, and he said to me, are you sure there was only one report? I said, yes, sir. I was standing by. Only one round was fired. He says, well, there are three wounds, you see. He says, it's most extraordinary. He says, the bullet must have entered there and ran up the spine, come out of the ridge of muscle, crossed over the backbone, and gone into the ridge of muscle the other side. Three wounds with one bullet. I should think almost an unchronicled bit before. As a rule, there are two wounds. You usually get two wounds with a bullet, a wound of entry and a wound of exit, or just a wound of entry with the body bullet still in the body.
What happened to this man? Would he have lived?
Oh, I don't know, because we had him, in a half an hour, we had him in an ambulance and taken straight away down to hospital.
That was typical, was it? You would not know what happened to people you'd treated.
Typical of what could happen in when you are when you are attached to a fighting unit. You never know what's going to happen.
Well, I believe you once had a contact with the French where you...
Yes, one night, Bombardier Pierce, who was my half-section, as they call it, in the Royal Horse Artillery, he was the man with whom I drew rations. We all our rations are drawn in pairs. We were a section. One night we decided we'd go for a walk. It was very bitterly cold, and of course we were sleeping. Our billet at Fletch was over the pigs, an enormous pigsty, and we climbed a ladder onto a ledge, a broad ledge up above them, which was well endowed with straw, and we slept there, you see. Well, it was very cold, and we decided we'd go for some exercise, frosty night. And we went for a walk, and after about 2 kilometres, turned a corner sharply, and we're right on the end of a French soldier's bayonet. You see, he was on guard there. And he challenged us. And, of course, all we could do was to say we were out for a walk. He took us down to the guard room. And presently an officer came down, asked us our names, our unit, where we were billeted. He rang up, confirmed, came back, confirmed that we were correct. And then the colonel of the French unit came to us, a white-haired old chap, very kindly reproved us. He says, "You English," he says, "you're treating the war like a game," he says. He said, "It's not a game, my lads," he says. "It's a very serious affair." And then he pushed us off and said, "Now go back to your unit," he says, "and please don't treat this war as a game."
So this was after I Battery had pulled out of Kemmel, and you were at Fletch.
Fletch, Fletre.
And that's near Meteren.
Near Meteren, yes.
Now, what this billet you were telling us about above the pigsty?
Yeah.
What sort of recreations and what sort of daily routine did you have while you were here?
Well, I was there. I used to get up in the morning, and if there were any sick, which I must tell you there were very very seldom. I hardly ever had a man to deal with when we were out of the line. They were all strong, healthy fellows. But if there was any case that needed treatment, I used to get Captain Crean to come down or take them up to him to see them.
So you dealt with the minor ailments, and if it was anything serious, you got the officer.
Yeah, I dealt with minor ailments myself, but anything that I thought required the doctor's attention, I used to get Captain Crean to see them.
Now, what sort of recreations would you have? How would you spend the evening here? Because it's fair way from the line.
Well, in the evening, laying down. Well, if we weren't laying down at rest, we used to go down to the estaminet. There was an estaminet down in Fletcher Village, or really it was part of Meteren, and go down there and sit down and drink beers, and the gunners used to start a sing song. See, and really enjoyed themselves. There was one gunner, Gunner Johnson, he was originally an H Battery man, but he was called up to join I Battery on mobilisation, and he used to start off the sing song with a regular old Royal Horse Artillery song, "The Old Brown Cow," and really assumed the estaminet was ringing with this chorus. All the gunners there, and there were usually about 30 or 40 of them there, they rang, made the rafters ring with this chorus of "The Old Brown Cow." Mm. Now, an extraordinary thing was, I never saw him again after I left I Battery until 40 years afterwards. And when one day I was walking through St. James's Park, and there was Gunner Johnson, one of the head keepers. And we had a long powwow there, but I didn't see him for 40 years.
Can you still remember the song?
The Old Brown Cow. Yeah. went splash against the old brown cow, went splash against the wall, E-I-E-I-O, and so on. And that was the song.
Now, would people drink in this Estaminet? Was it a...
Yes, they were drinking the French beer, which was very light, and you'd have to drink gallons of it to get anywhere near tipsy. It was very light, and that did them no harm at all.
They didn't drink wine, then?
No, it was always usually the light beer.
Did they serve food at all?
Pardon?
Did they serve food?
No food.
Who would run it? Was it local French?
Oh, the local Belgian? French Estaminet owner. The typical French Estaminet. You could have wine if you wanted it, but the troops they wanted was beer.
Now, how long did you stay at Fletch?
I stayed at Fletch until the end of March. Well, by the way, shortly after we got back from the Sanctuary Wood trenches, there was a divisional parade. On the question of inoculations. You see, before the war, we were inoculated against typhoid, but, you know, this inoculation was not mandatory. It was optional. And it was still optional in March 19... It's still optional in January 1915. It was still optional. And one day, the ADMS, that's Assistant Director Medical Services, came round and held a parade and asked for volunteers to be inoculated. He said, because you don't realise the danger from typhoid fever out here, you see, in the water. And he got very few volunteers, I can assure you. But the point where I came in was, I saw him speaking to Major Kay, who was commanded I Battery, and shortly afterwards he came up to me, the ADMS, and said, well, Corporal, he says, you seem to be getting on very well here. He says, I'm going to give you 3 days' leave. I said, well, in England. 3 days in England. And so I was one of the early soldiers who came home to England for 3 days' leave in January 1915. January 1915. January 1915. Yes, soon after we came out of of the trenches. By the way, it was January when that parade was held, not March. It was January when the ADMS held that parade, not March. January, and because then he came over to me and said, "I'm going to put you on," said, "give you 3 days' leave," and I went home on 3 days with one of the Corporal Wallington of I Battery. The two of us went together.
What can you remember about that leave?
Well, I remember I came home to England, and I was going along North End, Croydon. There was a window with souvenirs of the fighting, you know, soldiers' hats with bullet holes, soldiers' caps with bullet holes through them, and all sorts of German souvenirs and souvenirs of one thing and another. And I myself, I don't want to ever see too many of these, because I can see them at first hand. But I just had three. The beauty was, you can have a bath, get some clean gear on, and go and see old friends, and actually. Sleep as long as you wanted to, you know. Go to bed and get up in the middle of the morning if you wanted to.
How did they react to your old friends and your family? Did they want to know what was happening out in France and Belgium?
Well, most of the people wanted to know, but there was very little one could tell them, because, you know, in January the line was pretty quiet.
Did they understand the sort of conditions?
No, they never would do. They couldn't possibly. They couldn't convey it to them.
Did you try?
I tried sometimes, but it's impossible to convey it to them. I mean, the water trickling down those, constant trickling down those trenches, with people standing in mud, you know, up to your ankles in mud.
So you enjoyed your leave then?
I enjoyed it, yes.
And then you went back?
Went back, yes. We went over on the ship to Folkestone, up to Victoria, and the same way back. Victoria to Folkestone and back. No incidents either way.
One point I forgot was, did you, at Christmas, were there any special Christmas celebrations in 14?
No Christmas celebrations. We had the chocolate box from Princess Mary. We had, there was a box of chocolates from Princess Mary. And I believe that box of mine is still somewhere, knocking about somewhere, but I couldn't tell you where. I've moved about so much.
Did you hear anything of the Christmas truce?
The Christmas, we weren't in the line at the time of the Christmas truce. You see, we came out of the line just before Christmas. We came away from Kemmel. We came away from Kemmel before Christmas, and we didn't go back into the line until after Christmas. So we were nowhere near where the truce was.
And did you hear any rumours about it?
Never heard any rumours of it, no.
What happened then after your leave?
Well?
What happened after your leave?
Well, after the leave, I got back, and one day I saw Colonel Langstaff, Major Langstaff, the Major Langstaff of No. 1 Cavalry Field Ambulance, walking into the yard, the farmyard where I was, and he came up to me and said, Corporal, he said, get yourself packed up. He says, I'm calling you into the field ambulance. And he saw my face drop. And he said, then he added, on promotion to sergeant. So, well, of course, that explained why. And I then had the left eye battery, where I'd been, I hope, useful. And I used to syringe the gunner's ears for them after an engagement, you know, because the wax used to congeal in them. I did all those sort of things, and I'd been very happy there, and they appreciated what I did. So I had to leave my happy assignment and join No. 1 Cavalry Field Ambulance. And that was at the end of the beginning of April.
This being promoted to sergeant, that was enough to compensate you, was it?
Oh yes. Nothing could compensate me. I would have stayed with I battery forever if I could, but at least I just didn't have any question. There was no question. I had to pay. It was an order, and I had to pay it.